Hi, everybody. This is Tim Friedman, your host of Tim Friedman 70s Rock Conversations, featuring rock expert Frank Ost. Last week, we brought to you Season 3 highlights. This week, highlights of Season 2. Next week, highlights of Season 1. And then a preview of Season 4, which gets underway starting up on November 1st with brand new episodes. And keep in mind, our one-year anniversary is coming up at the end of November. So every Monday, we'll bring you brand new episodes starting November 1st. In the meantime, we're going to keep you up to date on the concert calendar and also today in rock history. This is October 11th, so let's get started with highlights of Season 2, Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. All right, Frankie, we're going to keep you up to date, even though we're going to do highlights of Season 2 this week. But what happened today in rock history? It's always a fun segment to start off the show.
Absolutely.
On this date in October 11th, 1955... Elvis, Carl Perkins, and Johnny Cash began an 11-day tour in the southern United States, starting with a show in Abilene, Texas.
Ooh, wow. That would have been something, huh?
There's that show, the stage production Million Dollar Quartet.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great show. Jerry Marsden of Jerry and the Pacemakers in 1965, October 11th, married Paula Behan. She was the secretary of his fan club.
Oh, okay. That's neat.
Muddy Waters was seriously hurt in a car accident, which also killed three other people. In an accident near Chicago on this date in 1969.
Wow.
1970, Elvis Presley added another badge to an ever-growing collection of his. He was sworn in Bel Air, California, as a special deputy sheriff.
Okay, I get that.
A new show called Saturday Night Live premiered on NBC on this date in 1975. You know, they didn't call it Saturday Night Live. Howard Cosell had an ABC show called Saturday Night Live.
Oh, that's right.
So that's why they say live from New York, it's Saturday night.
Okay.
Took them a little while to get the Saturday Night Live moniker because I think Howard's show only lasted like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, and I remember we all think of that cast and how that show was great right out of the box. But yeah, the first couple, if you remember correctly, you kind of looked at it like, what is this?
A little sketchy.
It was. It was.
It was hosted by George Carlin, great first host. Janice Ian performed at 17. That's a great song to pump the crowd up, you know?
Absolutely.
Billy Preston sang Nothing for Nothing and a song I'd never heard of called Fancy Lady.
Okay.
Anyway, that was they had two musical acts in 1975. Yeah. Apple Records and the computer company Apple in 1991 settled a lawsuit over the name and logo rights. Apparently, Apple Corporation reportedly paid $29 million for those rights fees.
I didn't realize that.
It's money well spent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rod Stewart was knighted by Prince William at Buckingham Palace on this date 5 years ago, officially becoming Sir Roderick David Stewart. Birthdays. Henry Hines was born on this date in 1884.
Okay.
If you ask his mom, they said the birth was very, very slow. Eleanor Roosevelt, also born on this date in 1884. Daryl Hall, Hall & Oates, 73 years old today.
That's hard to believe, yep.
Concert calendar time, Frankie. Don Felder was just at the Kent stage a week ago on Thursday. Sting begins a residency at Caesar's Palace in the Coliseum, in Vegas at the end of the month on the 29th. He's going to have some dates in October and November and then starting out again next June. Won't be long. The Rock Hall induction ceremonies will be taking place.
That's right.
That's on the 30th of October. 30th of November, though, Genesis will be performing at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, their first North American tour in 14 years. It's a huge tour. They're playing in Detroit the night before, so hopefully everybody will be nice and fresh.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's quite going to work. I know Phil Collins has had some physical problems, so yeah, it's going to be an interesting show.
Not a lot going on at Blossom anymore. You know, the fall is here, and things have kind of closed down there and at other outdoor venues. So not a lot of shows happening in October, but the MGM Center Stage, Northfield Park, is going to be kicking into high gear pretty soon. November 3rd, the Monkees. The next night, Chicago. The next night after that, Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience. Bob Dylan's going to play at the KeyBank State Theater on Friday, November 5th as well. It's his first leg of his Rough and Rowdy Ways World Tour, performing almost every night through early December here in the U.S., and he's going to have a tour that will extend until 2024. He'll give Elton John a run for his money that way, won't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's closing in on 80. I can't believe that he's going on a major tour, but it sure sounds that way.
Now, remember Carl Palmer, one of your favorite guys and drummers.
Absolutely.
You made a case for ELP and our Two Should Get In segment His ELP Legacy is celebrating their 50th anniversary. The supergroup is going to be at Kent Stage on Friday, November 12th. Good night for a show, 8 p.m.
Absolutely.
Here are highlights of Season 2. Steven Tyler introduced AC/DC, the Thunder from Down Under, the band that hailed from Sydney, Australia. What did you think of AC/DC?
Wow, I'm thunderstruck. Nah, they're a terrific band. Rock and roll to its core, and can wear on you. I must say I can't listen to them for a long time, but boy, their best hits are great tunes.
Money Talks, Long Way to the Top, Back in Black, Thunderstruck, which was not one of my son's favorites, especially at the bar right around halftime of a game or something when they'd play that song.
That's right.
That's a whole other generation. Who Made Who, Have a Drink on Me. You need to have some aspirin sitting next to you if you're going to listen to a lot of AC/DC music, because it'll definitely get into your ears, won't it?
And made to be played loud.
Absolutely. Sunday Bloody Sunday, Pride in the Name of Love. With or Without You. Still haven't found what I'm looking for.
You can't get a better list than that.
Great tunes, and as I said, I wish I could get with them more. I just can't. I don't know why.
Yeah, I should have seen them at least 3 times in concert, and never did. And I feel bad about that. It's probably one of the holes in my rock education.
Your concert-going experience.
You're absolutely right.
Do you feel that you've been cheated by it, or you feel less than?
I feel a little bit less than, yeah.
It doesn't absolutely keep you up at night, though.
No. No, I've seen a lot of rock concerts, so I think I can go without a few.
Spotlight year, Frankie, 1974. In the past, we kind of poo-pooed that year, didn't we? We didn't think it was that great of a year. It was an off year.
It wasn't the greatest year for some of them, but, you know, even a bad year in rock and roll can have some great things in it.
Clapton, 461 Ocean Boulevard.
Fantastic record.
Now, you probably have seen the HBO documentary, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, by the Bee Gees. They were asked to spend some time in Miami at 461 Ocean Boulevard because just a year or two earlier, Eric Clapton was there recording and had such great success. And,
right.
You know, you're surrounded by palm trees, warmth, and of course they took turns recreating that iconic pose of his by the front yard palm tree. So that's what got them together again in that main course album of 1975 with the Nights on Broadway and Fanny and got their career going.
Yeah, that really kicked them back into high gear.
So this was just a year earlier, Clapton and 461 Ocean Boulevard. What'd you think about Hotel California? Eagles were one of our early featured artists.
But right, and it came out right at the end of 76, but it definitely dominated the year 1977. There's no question about it.
David Bowie had a couple that year, Low and Heroes.
Oh, fantastic records, but my favorite is Heroes. Did it with Brian Eno as one of the producers. And it really is a different record. It's totally different from anything he did before. There's some instrumentals on there, just some strange stuff, but full of melody. And, of course, this song, Heroes, is still one of my favorites today.
5 and 5 top albums, 1980. When I first started looking at that in my record collection, CD collection, I'm like, 1980, yeah. But then, as I started going through them, I had trouble leaving stuff out.
Exactly.
For me, Hold Out, Jackson Browne, just loaded with great tunes. That Girl Could Sing, Hold On, Hold Out, great album in 1980. And then 1980, Remain in Light, does the same thing for you, doesn't it? You have to check it out, kind of like Reelin' in the Years, Steely Dan. Like, who is this band? Todd Rundgren for me.
I knew a little bit about them. Of course, I'd heard Take Me to the River, but I didn't really realize that they had that kind of talent.
That's what I thought, too. Take Me to the River was good.
Yeah.
I really liked it a lot, and I was hoping for more, and we got that again, didn't we?
What a fantastic record.
Deep Purple came out with Shades of Deep Purple. I wasn't a big Deep Purple fan until Smoke on the Water. I know they did some other stuff before that, but in 1968 they had that album. Simon & Garfunkel and some other artists had the Graduate soundtrack.
That's right.
Movie was all the rage. Elvis, live from Burbank, his TV special. And Donovan, Hurdy Gurdy Man.
Oh, I love Donovan. Thought he did great stuff.
What was that first single of yours you purchased of his?
Sunshine Superman.
Sunshine Superman.
Absolutely.
He had some cool names for,
yes, he did,
for song titles, didn't he? Sometimes they'd play them back-to-back on Wixie.
That's right.
Because they did stuff like that. Mac Davis, Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me. Love that song. Love Mac Davis. Don McLean's American Pie and Vincent, all out in 1972.
Oh, my God.
Good years for that. And The Hollies, Long Cool Women, written by Roger Cook, Roger Greenaway. And The Hollies, Alan Clark. Cook and Greenaway wrote all those hits before My Baby Loves Lovin' and Like to Teach the World to Sing.
Oh, okay.
Alan Clark, the lead singer and founding member of The Hollies. Great
that's
tune.
Right.
For my money, that's the best intro of any rock hit song of all time. For
Boy,
some
what
love
a
that
fantastic
song.
Intro that is, too.
Put on Blood on the Tracks, and what a fantastic album it is. Has my favorite Dylan song, Tangled Up in Blue, on there.
Oh, that's a good one.
And as he put it, it's a very simple song. It took him 10 years to live and a year to write. You know, just a fantastic tune. Others on that, A Simple Twist of Fate, Shelter from the Storm, and one of my favorite up-tempo Bob Dylan songs, Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts, just a fun song. This seemed to have a little bit of everything. It had the heartbreak on it, but it also had some humor on it, and I liked that. And it had a lot more melody than I usually get with Dylan.
Top albums, 1979, Frankie. You give me yours, your top five, and in no particular order, and then I'll give you mine. How's that sound?
Sure.
Okay, go
ahead.
Sounds
great. I'd have to say probably the biggest album of the year was one by The Clash, London Calling. You heard it everywhere. It was kind of a new wave, punk, I'm not sure what you'd call it, but anyway, it was just a fantastic record, and with songs like London Calling, and just a fantastic record.
When you heard that album and The Clash, you knew something was not only coming, but it was already there.
Oh,
yeah. You know, and The Pretenders were soon to come. Blondie was already there.
Yeah, Elvis Costello tells a story about how he drove his people in his band crazy playing it, because they said, oh, these guys can't play. But he put it on and he said, listen to it. Listen to it some more. And made them listen to it. And I think they realized the power in that music.
It was produced by Gary Stevens, who also managed to give the name to Ian Hunter's group, Mott the Hoople. One Hit Wonders, Frankie. Chambers Brothers, 1968, came out with Time Has Come Today.
What a fantastic song that is, let me tell you.
Just that, missed cracking the top 10.
Of course, we hear the edit on back then, but now if you can get a hold of the original 7-8 minute song, fantastic piece of work.
Yeah, the original single version was only 2 minutes and 37 seconds long. The hit single was 3:05, you know, songs back then.
Yep.
MacArthur Park was out, I guess, the same year or something like that. Wasn't it a 7-plus-minute song?
And that was unheard of.
It was. Yet the album version goes on forever, a whopping 11 minutes and 6 seconds for the Chambers Brothers. It just missed cracking the top 10. It spent 5 weeks at number 11 in the fall of that psychedelic year.
Mm-hmm.
The rock band from Lee County, Mississippi, had a number 37 follow-up called I Can't Turn You Loose, which probably sounded a little bit like Time Has Come Today, didn't it?
Yeah, I bought the album and 9 other songs that you would never have heard of and never known and never cared about. And then one fantastic song.
That's a great song, isn't it?
It is.
One Hit Wonders, you're going to find a lot of these from 1971 and earlier. The Stampeders, Sweet City Woman. Remember that one?
Oh, I do.
The Canadian trio enjoyed much more success there with over a half dozen songs charting and charting high in our friends up north. Songs like Wild Eyes, which was number 2 for them a year later in Canada, Minstrel Gypsy, and Hit the Road Jack, both hitting number 6. Yet Hit the Road Jack would do no better than number 40 here. Sweet City Woman. That's a cool little song, isn't it?
It's a nice song. A little earworm. And I just remember it. What brings it back is
a little banjo.
Houlihan and Big Chuck played it for years as one of their bump music. It was really fun.
It's a fun song, a great way to kind of round out summer of 71, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm going to ask you, if I were to start a collection of Chicago, where would I begin?
Well, I'd start kind of in the middle of their famous run, the 5th album. And the reason I do that is because the first three studio albums were all double album sets. So you really got to invest your time. And there was a lot of long song suites, ballet for Girl and Buchanan, and things like that. And so I think that if you started and you hadn't heard them before and you started with the first one, I think the fifth record would be the one I would go with. It's got Saturday in the Park, so it's got some hits on it. It's got Dialogue, mm-hmm. parts one and two. But it also has some of their protest songs on it, such as...
Well, kind of like Dialogue.
Yeah, Dialogue, yeah. Obviously. But and more. State of the Union is on there, mm-hmm. too. So, great album, and it kind of hits the middle ground between what would come later and what had already come earlier. And you can kind of go either way with it from
there. Yeah, it's a good place to start. It's one album, so you're not investing a ton of time. You can listen to the hits. It's a kind of a fun album cover to look mm-hmm. at, and I'm sure there's stuff in there, maybe liner notes of lyrics and stuff like that.
Right.
Do they have a lot of liner notes with the lyrics? I know some bands
absolutely.
Did, some didn't.
Yeah.
So something to look at while you're...
I think almost on all of their records they did.
Chicago 5 would be for you.
Yeah, for me.
So, Frankie, this next segment is going to be our one and only time we'll do this. Our very first single, not one that we got from for Christmas or borrowed from the kid down the street or stole out of our brother or sister's collection when he or she wasn't noticing, but it was the first single you purchased with your own money, whether it be something you earned on your own or cutting the grass or allowance. For me, it was The Moody Blues, 1971 in the late summer, The Story in Your Eyes.
Wow, what a fantastic record for your first.
Ooh. Not bad. I still have it hanging on the wall right behind me with the little plastic adapter.
That's
our logo for our 70s mm-hmm. conversation show. You know, how many times have you flipped over a single, though, and found something great on the other side?
I used to be able to do that. Right?
I never flipped it over and listened to Melancholy Man, was not interested. I never listened to it. And I guess I can now, but I remember purchasing it, I guess, at Neisner's or maybe Melody Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Melody Lane, for those of you folks who aren't familiar with Cleveland or Lakewood area, they used to have every week the top 100 singles all in a row based on where they were in the countdown. And you could buy the single. All you do is look at the chart
That's
on the
right.
wall
yep.
and then say, I want number 89, and
mm-hmm.
you can purchase a single. So a lot of that was done back then. What were they, 79 cents or 69
something
cents?
Something like that,
like
yeah.
That.
Reasonably priced, let's put it that way.
So you could go there. You could go to Neisner's, which was a closer walk to you and me. So I remember I might have bought at the same time. The next one I bought, I do remember the second one, was Carpenters and Superstar.
Oh, boy.
So the Carpenters and
Leon
the Moody
Russell
Blues.
Wrote that one.
He did, yeah.
Yes.
And I did listen to the B-side, which was Bless the Beasts and the Children.
It's a good tune.
It's a nice tune. But so for the Carpenters, that was the second one. I kind of wish that I'd held off, though, on buying Story in Your Eyes and waited till the next release, which was my favorite one of theirs by the Moody Blues, Isn't Life Strange?
Oh,
I wish
that,
I had
Tom.
Held off now. How about you?
It's funny you mentioned the name, but Neisner's was where I headed for my first one. It was would have been summer of 1966, and I wandered in there and... bought a record called Sunshine Superman.
By Donovan,
yes.
It's one and only number one.
Exactly.
Mellow
and
Yellow went to number two, by the way.
It was kind of one of those first, very first, it was kind of into a little bit into the psychedelic end of things. And when I'm looking it up, I found out that the guitar and the bass on it were Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. In a few years would be Led Zeppelin, but at that time they were session musicians.
Isn't that funny? They'll be coming up quite a bit when we talk about Cat Stevens in our next episode as our featured artist. Sure enough, they wound up playing on a couple of his early tunes as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
But it's fun walking into a store like Neisner's, which was in downtown Lakewood, just a couple of blocks from where we lived, and a couple of blocks away from Woolworth, which it was a lot like Woolworth, wasn't it? Where you can get anything you wanted.
Yep.
And as a kid of, for me, 11, 10 years old, when you bring your own money down there, to not have to buy crayons and a coloring book.
That's
right. You
could
actually buy a record that was out right then.
Yeah, it was exciting.
I
remember flipping it over and finding a tune called The Trip. Now, I did not know this at the time, but that was a very psychedelic thing. And, of course, the trip they were talking about was one with drugs, mm-hmm. not what I was thinking about at
Where
all.
Where you get into the back of your country squire.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking of, something more on that vein. But You know, years later, I figured out exactly what it was.
You still have the single?
No. I think it's gone the way of all flesh. I do remember, though, the second one I bought was The Pied Piper.
Oh, by Crispin St. Peters.
Exactly. Kind of almost a novelty hit, but I guess he was a folk rocker, too. So I was kind of into that little bit of folk rock there.
On the flip side, Marty Balin. He of Jefferson Starship fame, one of the co-founders of the Jefferson Airplane, and left after the album Earth, which was fantastic. Then he had Hearts in 1981. I thought that was going to send him into at least somewhat stardom, maybe not superstardom category, but...
At least people would know. Yeah,
Marty Balin just kind of fell off the face of the earth. He passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I loved his work, obviously, with the Airplane and the Starship, and... You would have definitely thought that he was somebody that was going to have at least a decent career, and really petered out very quick.
It kind of did. It was too bad, because Hearts was a really good tune. It was out at the perfect time of year, and I thought great things were going to happen for him, and nothing ever did. Kind of fizzled out for him, didn't it?
Absolutely.
On this day, music history, April 19th, 1970, Blues Image, their one and only hit Ride, Captain, Ride, was released. That was a one-hit wonder for us not too long ago. 1975, Elton John fired bassist Dee Murray and drummer Nigel Olsen. He would rehire them in 1980. I don't know why he fired them.
I don't either. That was when he was hotter than July.
Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti was released on April 19th, 1975, again number one on the Billboard chart for the fifth consecutive week. So it had been out a while, but was number one. Physical Graffiti, that's one of your favorites, isn't it?
Absolutely. Cashmere starts off the whole thing and just gets better after that.
Bruce Springsteen was about halfway done with the song Because the Night, Patti Smith was recording too, and they liked their work, so she helped finish it up and released the single in 1978. 1980, REM performed live for the first time as a group.
Really?
Birthdays, Mark Volman, Flo, of Flo and Eddie fame, the Turtles.
That's right.
Born in 1948. Alan Price, the original keyboardist of the Animals, is 78.
Oh,
on this
God.
Day in rock history, May 3rd, as we air, 1964, Frankie, Jerry, and the Pacemakers appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time performing.
Wow.
And a lot of future rock artists saw it and said, I want to be.
Wow.
Maybe not. I know they did for the Beatles, but I'm not so sure anybody has ever said, once I saw Jerry and the Pacemakers, I was hooked. I was going to be a rock star.
You know, but I think a lot of people still, everybody couldn't be the Beatles.
Right.
So to see somebody else, maybe it did spur on some, hey, Jerry and the Pacemakers can do it. Yeah.
Dave Clark Five.
Yeah.
In 1967, the Hollies recorded the song Carrie Ann in not one, but two takes.
Definitely underrated band that was.
A year later, the Beach Boys, get this, began a tour with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi as their opening act. He began the show with a lecture that was unintelligible to the crowd. Needless to say, it was a disaster. The tour was canceled after just five dates, leave over two dozen shows still to play. The Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's... didn't last very long as a debut artist, did he?
No, he kind of got the most mileage of anybody back in the 60s between the Beatles and the Beach Boys.
Yeah, I think he outlived his 15 minutes, didn't he?
He definitely got
not a good opening act.
Got more than his 15 minutes.
Not a good opening act. The emergence of the rock lobster. How did that come to be? Everybody had some kind of mascot back then. It was the buzzard or the eagle or the fox. We had the rock lobster, and it's still there today.
Well, when the B-52's debut album came out, we started playing that like there was no tomorrow. I mean, that was, if one record epitomized the sound of ACRN in that era, and I guess that had to have been the spring of 1980, because that was my second spring as a program director. I got the job in 79, and we weren't playing it then. We probably started playing it in the fall of 79 and, you know, across into the spring. But in any case, we had a co-ed intramural softball team. And we needed a name for it was a ACRN softball team. We needed a name. And I think Bob Burnett suggested it, but I don't know for sure. May have been Doug Hill, but somebody said we should be the Rock Lobsters. And it was like, everybody turned around, looked at each other and said, of course, what else could we be? And so the softball team became the Rock Lobsters. And I think it was Dave Green drew up the yellow t-shirts with the red logo. And we got those printed up. Dan Trapp still has one. He put it on Facebook not long ago. And then it became more than just the softball team. It became the, you know, the buzzard of ACRN. So, I mean, it was just one of those things. It was just serendipitous thing of we're going to play softball, and now we need a team name because everybody else was the, you know, the bong hitters or the beer chuggers or the whatever, and we were going to be the Rock Lobsters.
Please welcome our very special guest, George Sipple. Fast forward into the 70s, Eric Harmon.
I was playing in a band called Magic. Magic was quite popular. It was a five-piece band. We did a lot of Beach Boy harmony things. We did a lot of Beatle medleys. We did... And then we did, like, you know, Tin Soldier by the Small Faces. We did MacArthur's Park. We did, you know, songs that not every other band in town were doing. And quite frankly, pulled them off quite well. And then when Eric wasn't on the road with the Raspberries, he used to come and see us play because he enjoyed us. We were Wednesday night at the Agora, Thursday night at the Corral. And then, yeah. You know, and then Thursday and Fridays and Saturdays were always CYO dances or high school dances, things like that. Mm-hmm. So we were a fairly busy band at the time. And then when Eric broke up with the Raspberries, he was ready to do his solo album. And instead of getting studio musicians and all that, he went, I'm going to take you guys and you're going to be the background band. And that's how we ended up on the first Eric Carmen album, All by Myself, Never Gonna Fall in Love Again, Sunrise, and just a whole bunch of, like, really great songs.
That led to some national TV exposure, no?
Did the Midnight Special. Which was, you know, it was nerve-wracking. You know, to know that, you know, if I sneeze, everybody in the United States and half the world will see me sneeze, you know. Just an amazing thing. Even back then, how ancient things were, they only had, like, I think a 16-channel board. I mean, it was really limited as to what they could bring in. And the thing was, the Eric Carmen Band had two full drum sets, a percussion set, my keyboards, Rich Rising's keyboards, who also played guitar, Eric's keyboards, the grand piano, and he also played guitar, Dan Herdlicka's guitar, Steve Nill's bass, and then all the vocals, everyone in the band was a singer. I mean, so it was, what, eight mics then or something, you know, just for vocals.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of sub-mixing involved in that show. But and now that I look back at it, if I go to, you know, YouTube and put it up, it wasn't too bad. For doing, like, a live shtick, Never Gonna Fall in Love Again with all those harmonies. I thought it ended up sounding, and that was live, you know? It wasn't like a studio remix or let's go in and do some overdubs and fix this. No, it was nothing like, it was live.
Season 2 featured artists Electric Light Orchestra, David Bowie, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Cat Stevens, Anne and Nancy Wilson, Heart, Genesis, Billy Joel, Todd Rundgren, CCR, The Cars. Frankie, tell me about Marvin Gaye.
You know, for a lot of us, it was one of the first times we've really delved into black music, other than, you know, just the Motown stuff that was kind of just general. You said Motown.
Temptations.
I like Motown, yeah.
Four Tops, yeah. That's what comes to mind.
This was actually going into a room with the man himself and listening to a record, you know, put out by him, and it was just life-changing, really.
1971 was a cool year for certain artists. We talked about the Who, how their stuff from the 60s can't explain my generation. May not have translated very well to 70s music, but Who's Next certainly did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for Marvin Gaye, Motown R&B stuff always works. Mm-hmm. But when you want to get a little more introspective, then Marvin Gaye, What's Going On was the perfect thing to put on your turntable, wasn't it? Kennedy Center honorees 2019 honored a couple years ago with Sally Field and Linda Ronstadt, who was one of our featured artists and great, great voice. Maurice began shopping demos of their work around to record companies, including the vocals of Donnie Hathaway. The late Donnie Hathaway, you know, performed with Roberta Flack, The Closer We Get to You, Where's the Love. Eventually signed to Warner Brothers label, released their debut album in 1971. Caught the attention of one Clive Davis.
Oh, boy.
And he was so impressed, he brought out their Warner Brothers contract and signed them immediately to Columbia Records, and it was a good sign.
Boy, was it ever.
Now, early albums, The Need of Love, Last Days and Time, Head in the Sky, didn't really know who Earth, Wind, and Fire was until 1975, with That's the Way of the World,
late summer along with Get Down Tonight. There were some really, really good tunes.
Fantastic record. That's the way of the world.
Oof. Now, that was part of the soundtrack of the film, which kind of flopped. It starred Harvey Keitel. The film bombed, but the album didn't, producing the title cut, which peaked at number 12 in the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Also featured their number one hit, their first one, Shining Star.
That's right.
Catch Bullet 4. Now, Catch showed off his talent as a multi-instrumentalist. Get this list of... This is before he started playing synthesizer. Spanish guitar, acoustic guitar, electric guitar. All played by Cat, by the way. Electric mandolin. Didn't know that even existed.
Mm-mm.
The Wurlitzer electric piano and the Fender Rhodes electric piano. Not to mention lead and backing vocals. Just an amazing musician. And with his songwriting abilities, what a career he had into the mid-70s. The instrumentalist, the vocalist, producer, versatile songwriter, ahead of his time with technology, with computers, with AI stuff, video.
Yeah.
And he's also produced music videos, was a pioneer in distributing his music and computer technology to promote and distribute his tunes. A producer, too. Fantastic producer. Great producer. Badfingers, Straight Up, Grand Funk,
mm-hmm.
with their number one, We're an American Band, Shining On. Meat Loaf, Bad Outta Hell, still a classic.
One of the biggest selling records of all time.
And
he had his hand right in there.
And New York Dolls in 1973, and for one of their many reunions just recently.
Okay.
So the Cars, 7 studio albums, 8 compilations. 4 video albums since the 80s, video. 26 singles. I had no idea that they released that many singles.
I didn't either.
Yet, on their own, Rick Ocasek had Emotion in Motion, and that was it. Benjamin Orr had a hit too, but they didn't venture out on their own a lot and do their own thing, did they?
No. It's packed into pretty much those, 6 or 7 albums. It's in there.
They remained on the charts, that debut album did, which is really a cool album cover, as well as Candy O, but the Cars remained on the charts from 1978 for 139 weeks.
Wow.
Released in June of that year, recorded in London. You would think a Boston-based band would do something over here in the States, but no, it was London. Just What I Needed, written by Ben Orr. My Best Friend's Girl, All Shook Up. They had a really good side two, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Side two is just a classic.
It's phenomenal. Roy Thomas Baker produced, just like he did with Journey. The songs kind of run one after another into it.
And it all makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It wasn't quite a concept album, but it had that feel, didn't it?
It really did. And boy, you could just put that on and leave it for the next 20, 25 minutes.
The Electric Light Orchestra, their first album released way back in 1971 in the UK, March of 72 here in the US. It was pieced together over the course of almost a year. They had some other stuff. The Chuck Berry rocker, Roll Over Beethoven, came from ELO 2. What'd you think of that one?
What a fantastic record that was. And that's my favorite of the bunch. But some did better on the charts, such as the Beatles.
Yeah.
And we know Walter Murphy, but I really like that.
T-Rex member Mark Bolan played guitar on that song and, a couple of the tracks from the album at least, as well as a couple of other ELO albums. But I Go to Extremes, great tune. And So It Goes. We Didn't Start the Fire, which I still don't know how he remembers all those lyrics. He's got to have...
What's funny?
Kind of teleprompter in front of him.
What's funny is, and this is why rock is such a generational thing. I mentioned very briefly that we were doing Billy Joel to my daughter, and she immediately launched into that song, and she knows the whole thing by heart.
Does she really?
Yes, she does. She can give it to you the whole thing, the whole spiel.
Wow,
it's unbelievable. Now think about that, and she was 5 years old when that came out.
Yep,
that's. It's a generational thing.
It sounds a little to me like Sympathy for the Devil. We Didn't Start the Fire, and Sympathy was, after all, was you and me who did all this.
That's right. That's right.
So my favorites were these: Dreams, Crazy on You. I liked Dreamboat Annie. What About Love?
Oh.
Dog and Butterfly.
We can't go wrong.
Very strong live performances over the years. Very strong. And sang Stairway to Heaven at the Kennedy Center Honors. We talked about that when they were giving a tribute to Led Zeppelin. Anne's done a lot of projects and tours on her own over the years. She battled weight gain, liver disease, cocaine,
right.
alcohol abuse, but she says she's been sober for over a decade now.
That's great.
And so sometimes, as is the case with family members, especially if you're touring with them and hanging with them all the time. They get together, they kind of have a disagreement, and then they get back together again. They do their own thing. Anna Nancy Wilson, no different. Kind of, I guess, the Osmonds, the Jackson Five, even the DeFranco family probably had trouble staying together. It's hard enough with friends and whatever on the road. But Anna Nancy, kind of still recording. And they have a recording studio in Seattle called Bad Animals Recording. They're very heavily active in the Seattle music scene, as they have been all throughout the years.
Okay.
Getting bands going, nurturing some new bands. And the Bad Animals Recording Studio has also been the home to Neil Young, R.E.M., Pearl Jam, and others.
Wow.
Yeah, I did not know that. But Nancy Wilson, you know, These Dreams was co-written by Bernie Taupin. I didn't know that. But
I didn't realize that.
Offered to Stevie Nicks, who turned it down. It's funny how you never know.
That's right.
These Dreams was one of two singles to hit number one here. The other one was Alone in 1987. That was sung by
Anne. That's right.
And Nancy worked with Cameron Crowe. She was married to for a while. And also scored the film Jerry Maguire. Heard about that one. And also did the musical score for the film Almost Famous and other films like Vanilla Sky.
Really?
So Nancy Wilson, very talented in her own right as a solo performer.
I didn't realize she had that much to do with Almost Famous.
Huge tours, reunion tours, taken a hiatus from performing, then they've gotten back together, still going at it today. They've sold over 35 million albums to date worldwide.
Yeah, and they definitely wear that Led Zeppelin influence on their sleeve. I know I've heard a number of different cover tunes, such as Stairway to Heaven, Battle of Evermore is another one I've heard them do. Just love them.
CCR started out as the Gollywogs and the Blue Velvets in the 60s, swamp rock. Well, that's a good way to describe them, swamp rock.
Absolutely, and it's hard to believe that's four guys from California.
John Fogerty, lead singer, main songwriter. Tom Fogerty, his brother, never really got along.
No, not at all.
Rhythm guitarist. Tom passed away in 1990 at the age of 48. Bassist Stu Cook got along with Tom Fogerty, you know, performed on Tom's third and fourth solo efforts, as well as Doug Clifford. They played bass. So they actually, when the band broke up, they still kind of got together and played with each other. In fact, John Fogerty helped out a little bit here and there, but the main problem with them was they couldn't get along because they thought John was just too heavy-handed. You know,
and he was.
He wanted to be the producer. He told him how to sing a song and how to rehearse. And
exactly. He ran the band.
He did.
But he did everything.
So when was the first time you started hearing about or hearing stuff or listening to or buying stuff from Genesis?
I would say it was their next one, Lamb Lies Down,
74.
On Broadway. I really think that was the first time I'd heard them actively played by one of the stations around here.
Carpet Crawlers, Lamb Lies Down, both singles, album promoted on their North America and Europe tour in late November of 74, all the way through May 75. Genesis came to Public Hall in Cleveland for two dates, and it was on, it was very early on in that tour, only the fourth date. But apparently that's when Peter Gabriel notified the band of his impending departure from the group.
Wow, incredible.
And they were just starting their tour. He influenced glam rock, punk rock, dance and soul. His record company stated it perfectly with the slogan, there's old wave, there's new wave, and then there's David Bowie.
That's great.
Season 2 was just great. I loved it. You know, one of our most popular downloads is the one where we featured Cleveland rock and roll legend George Sipple. It's like our fifth highest downloaded show of all time. Everybody's listening to it worldwide, too. We have people listening in Japan and Kuwait and Great Britain, Germany, of course, the United States, all over the world. We really appreciate you listening to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. Frank and I will be back next week with highlights of Season 1 before our preview of Season 4. Brand new episodes begin, keep in mind, November 1st, right here